This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June 13th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
We'll celebrate our 20th anniversary by talking about all-time highs for corn and soybeans. That'll happen today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. It's our 20th anniversary edition. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Wayne, you're a farmer with soybeans left to plant for the very first time. Do you plant them or collect the 60% prevented planting payment you are signed up for crop insurance? If you opt for collecting the payment, would you use it to bankroll a position in the market? And be careful here, because remember, your APH for this year gets recorded at 60% yield too.
Well, Todd, at this point in time, I would go ahead and still plant the beans, as we can still do it in the next two-week time period. Number one, we've got a lot of varieties of beans that have a very good chance. You know, as we come in and double crop this time of year, could it be 30, 35 bushel beans, if not a little better, if the weather turns out okay. Number two, you said we already have a preventive policy, which would allow us, which means we have probably CRC or an RA policy, which would mean we would get paid even on our, if we have a loss on our policy, at the higher price probably down the road, because preventive plant is on your initial guarantee, and we're over $1.50 higher now, or $2, $3, going to be $3 higher on the beans on just a CRC policy, and we have unlimited on RA if we keep on going up with the way things are going. So if we would get some beans produced, sell them at a higher price, or fill their contracts so we don't have to pay back or buy back and do that, I think that we could probably make $200 to $300 more an acre by going ahead and planting the crop.
And Paul, I'll make it just a little bit easier. Would you be willing to take the 60%, or do you want to go ahead and plant the beans?
Good question. My general impression is that there is the world of insurance. And then there is the world of farming. And everybody, the concern is to have raise enough grain to meet cash sales. And that's a big fear. The big fear is that if you sold corn at $4 a bushel, you better have corn to deliver in southern Illinois and southern Indiana, because the crop insurance doesn't make that deliver that grain to those elevators. And there can be certain scenarios that the farmer still might not get a payment on a crop with the price and yield out there. So, you know, you still have to raise a crop for everything to really work. So it is two different worlds there, and I want to make that, you know, perfectly clear. Now, the question is, are farmers going to plant soybeans in drowned out spots in the cornfields? And the answer is, from what I get, is it's 50-50, it's cosmetic, it may be, but a lot of them, it won't get done.
Dan?
I think it depends upon where you're at in the Corn Belt. I've talked to a lot of farmers that are in that situation, and you know, planting beans after July 1 can get a little tricky. You got to have things kind of go your way. So it depends a lot of your area, your individual farm soil types. I don't think there's a flat answer, but I do think that the market is going to try to encourage that. I think that is what the bean rally is all about in here, is try to encourage more acreage because we're off to such a slow start. Yield potential has been lost because of the lateness, and we've got a lot of drowned out acres in the Corn Belt. So I do think the market is kind of in the mix here to try to encourage people to do that, and I think each individual farmer will have to size that up as the time comes.
We'll come back to the soybeans in just a bit, but let's get the numbers from the corn for the week. July corn this week at a high of $7.37.5. A low at 6.50 and a settlement price at 6.31¾, up 81 cents from last week. New all-time contract highs in December. Corn for the new crop at $7.65 on their settlement price, up 87¼ from last week. Here are the other important numbers for the corn from the week. 89% of the crop has emerged, and at least last week, about 65% was in good to excellent condition. The WASDE figures released by the World Outlook Board Tuesday told us our ending stocks for the year were up 50 million bushels to a carryout of 1.433 billion. But the coming crops carryout was slashed 100 million bushels to a mere 673 million. Now, the trade moved sharply higher, and then the flood reports continued to roll in from the Midwest, Paul Cooley. And then you have to start thinking about where the upside potential in this marketplace goes. I'd like to get your fundamental side of it and then hear from Dan what technically he thinks the market might do.
Yeah. Well, one of the key factors here is that in 1993 in Iowa, there was 2.5 million acres of corn in the bottoms that were destroyed. And simple math is that it's probably a 500-year flood in the state of Iowa. Now, in Brockton, Illinois, where most of our farmland is, and Newman, we call it a 50-year flood, and we go back to 1957, and there's been some others. Our general impression is that the government's 86-million-acre base acreage is probably small. It's probably 87 or 8, but we do think there's 4 to 5 million acres that have been flooded out or destroyed. And so the actual harvested acres are somewhere in the base acreage is somewhere in that 82 million acres. And the arithmetic is quite simple. We're going to probably see $8 to $9 soybeans from a fundamental point of corn on a fundamental point here. And the arithmetic is so bullish that that we probably will see the Secretary of Agriculture, whoever the new one is, elected, they probably will open the CRP up for production.
$8 to $9 corn. It's easy to call that soybeans.
It is. So it's a slip of the tongue.
That's right. $8 to $9 corn. Well, where can you track the numbers out technically? How high?
Well, how high is a hard one, but I mean, at least for the near term here, there's a lot of technical objectives that chart types will be looking at between 820 and 860. So that kind of fits that between that $8 and $9 area. I think, as what Paul mentioned, that if USDA confirms that we have lost upwards of 3 to 4 million acres and we're down into this 83 million acre planted area, this is not what the market needs. And it basically says you're going to have to ration upwards of a billion bushels out of supply-demand balance sheet. And I think if that's the case, then we're going to be talking some double-digit corn values, I think, to probably get that job done. The market is not going to have any patience. There's going to be a lot of – and I think this past week you can see the panicness really began to set in. It started a week ago, and the panicness really started to take hold this week by being up 85 cents.
You're not going to sneak a double-digit corn value in without following up just a little bit on that.
Well, if you're going to talk about some double-digit numbers, you probably I got them in this 1162 to 1237 area. But those are, like I said, we haven't have confirmation fundamentally yet whether or not we can go there.
Is that the mid-90s high and then the low and then back up to what, 65 to a Fibonacci number? Or where did you come up with that?
Those are Fibonacci extension numbers of wavelengths. When you start wanting to come up with those kind of numbers, that's about the only method you really have at this point is using a Fibonacci ratio and multiplying it by the second leg that we've had in this corn market.
Well, let's talk about the June 30 numbers. Will USDA be close? Will they adjust? How are they going to figure it? Wayne?
Well, Todd, I think that that is a big question mark out there in everybody because those numbers have been put together probably have started way before all this happened in many cases. And so we figure that we will do some adjusting between now and when they release them for what numbers they put together to start with. Number one, just because of the flooding conditions like that and wanting to be a little more accurate. But there's a lot of people that feel that we won't see the real numbers until some adjustments later in the summer. But we all know that there are going to be very bullish numbers and very bad as far as the people on the demand end are looking or end users.
Paul Cooley, let's talk about another explosive situation. Soybeans this week, $15.71¾ the high, the low at $14.19 in the July, and a settlement price at $15.60, up $1.25 from the previous week. November at $15.31 on their settlement, up $0.91¾. USDA Monday reported just 77% of the nation's bean crop had been sown. That's 12 points behind the 5-year rolling average. Illinois, the big laggard there, at 66% done. Have farmers in this state caught up yet?
No, I don't think so. But they're working hard at it. The weather forecast next week is better. That's a positive thing. And I think we have somewhere in that 12 to 15 million acres to plant in the U.S. A couple things. The soybean market did see that very tight carryover of probably 125 million bushels. We are looking at a situation where a lot of the soybeans are going to be planted late. And then our friends in South America, there's major problems in Argentina. The other factor is the acreage explosion that's going to take place in Brazil because of higher prices. Well, some of it's going to sugar. Some of it's going to corn. And the real economic incentive to plant a lot of extra soybeans, it just isn't going to materialize. So the world is looking at soybeans, and we still are the most reliable supplier in the world for soybeans. And that's what some of the factors that we are seeing this gain in the old crop versus the new. And we really won't get any kind of a major price or acreage explosion if the CRP acres come out. That could add to another 100 million bushels of soybeans when it's all said and done. So the arithmetic is still very bullish on soybeans. We are seeing a lot of things about the markets playing games about less corn acres, maybe more bean acres. So there's a lot of fun there, but it all boils down to a very bullish situation.
We've got numbers for the corn from Paul and from Dan. Wayne, you want to take a shot at an upside potential for the soybeans?
Well, we were talking midweek. There was talk of $16 beans is where they would need to go. And by the end of the week here, the $18 mark comes in there. I think that we had some people that were looking just at like $23 calls and how expensive they even were at this point in time. So there are people out there buying $23, $24, and $25 bean calls at this point in time and paying what we consider pretty high prices for those. So, but I think $18 is probably within the possibility, depending on how the next couple weeks go in getting beans in the ground. And as Dan said, after July 1st, I think a lot of people consider not planting, but up through the end of June here, I think that we will see a lot of farmers that will continue to plant if possible.
Dan, by the numbers, what's it look like?
Like I said, there's similar to corn where there's a lot of, corn's got a lot of 820s to 860 objectives, depending on how you come up with it. There's a lot of $17, $18, $19 objectives in soybeans. If you want to reach it out, and I'm just telling you these numbers based upon some Fibonacci ratios, just like the corn numbers, you can begin to start talking about $23, $25 price objectives up there at some point in time. But those look awfully rich, just as, those double-digit corn numbers. But that, I think, June 30th report is going to be very key to whether or not any of this talk is going to be realized or materialized, and we'll kind of have to go from there.
You know, old crop bean carryout is predicted to be a mere 125 million bushels, that from USDA, but demand by the numbers on the board remains pretty strong. Next year's ending stocks figure is a bit bigger at 175 million bushels. That's still short 10 million from the last estimate. Paul, with Iowa flooded and the plants closing, will farmers near other processing plants see a jump in their basis?
They could. They could. And that's a good marketing idea. And certain river places that can handle beans will bid more than other locations that can't get bids. And farmers are calling me and asking me about what kind of a price they should offer beans at and things like that. So it is a discovery process, the futures market and as well as the cash market, and to be a good shopper is the best advice.
Here's some other numbers as they finished up in Chicago for the week. Wheat futures, July an 8.93 top, bottom at 7.86.5, and a settlement price up 72 at $8.82. July 09 at 9.55, up 59 and a quarter. June cattle at 95.57 and a half settlement price, up $1.72 and a half. The August feeders at 109.15 were down 3.10, and June lean hogs were off $1.72 and a half at 73.40. Back in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Sunny, breezy, and warm weather helped dry out a soggy Illinois this week. After record daily rainfall in parts of Illinois last weekend, high pressure brought some pleasant weather to Illinois for much of this week. Once the cold front slipped to the south on Tuesday, slightly cooler and much drier air spread south through most of Illinois. Temperatures were 2 to 5 degrees above normal this week, and the warm weather, combined with a breeze and dew points in the 50s to low 60s, provided some ideal drying conditions for waterlogged central and southern Illinois. After the rain last weekend and a few showers late Monday, the middle of the week was dry. Showers and thunderstorms returned again on Thursday and Friday. While the rain wasn't the intensity of last weekend, any rain is likely to be a problem for a while. High pressure will drift over Illinois this weekend and bring us some nice weather. Another cold front could bring some scattered showers and thunderstorms back to Illinois on Sunday, but that'll be followed by sunny, seasonably warm, and dry weather for much of next week. It appears the next good chance for showers and thunderstorms will be next weekend as a weak cold front starts to make its way again through Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June 13th. Today, we're celebrating 20 years of Commodity Week, a program that came into existence because of the persistence of its very first host, the late Charles Lindy, and a group of dedicated agriculturalists. 20 years ago, on that very first show, Paul Bates, Daryl Good, and the distinguished Paul Cooley sat down in a WILL AM5 studio and began something extraordinary. The concept was simple, and it remains that way today. Let's just talk about what's happening in the commodity markets, and in the process, try to teach our listeners a little something about how they work and hopefully how to better use them. Tell me about the very beginnings and the roots of this program, Paul Cooley.
Well, I wanted to say a very big thank you to ADM for letting me do it for 20 years, and, of course, WILL with the same basic vision and wanting to make it an excellent program in the Midwest. I had been a broker for 16 years, and we came up with a lot of things like the market analysts, the morning and afternoon, and then the pre-call, and then I told Charlie at the time, who liked to do things and come up with ideas as well as coming up with this commodity week. And it was exciting in the fact that it has probably become a premier show in the Midwest, and it's on the internet, and people listen to it, and we get a lot of fanfare from it. It was exciting to listen and talk to Earl Butz, and it was exciting to listen and talk to people like Dwayne Andreas, Carol Brunhaver, the Congressman Tom Ewing, Tim Johnson, presidential candidates there, ag advisors, both Republican and Democrat, former secretaries of agriculture. You know, these are the kind of things that just absolutely were exciting and talk about issues of the time. So a tip of the hat to Charles, tip of the hat to WILL. It's been a lot of fun. And people like Paul Bates and Joe Grant were all in there pushing and shoving and making it all happen.
But we had a lot of fun in those early years.
We sure did.
I can remember, I forgot about having Uncle Joe Grant in, and I can remember actually having you, one of the favorite panels to have in at the time, and I've been here over time on and off, I suppose, having you and Wayne and Uncle Joe on a panel was a load of fun. Wayne, are there any memories over the years that you can recall, things that went awry, what happens in the studio, what happened behind the scenes here while we had somebody on the phone lines? Any kinds of memories?
Oh, we've had times, Todd, where the guy on the phone got disconnected. We've had times when the recorders didn't work through the time, when maybe somebody said corn wasn't supposed to be beans. But a lot of times, as you said, we had the old studio at Gregory Hall. The student assistant was back in the little room trying to run things. And sometimes after some of the things we said and how we answered some of their questions, the looks we saw on their faces were enough to make us want to laugh on the mic and do things that way. But we all remember Charlie and how he was very dedicated, very stern during the time of the program. But as soon as we clicked the last little bit, why, it was time to talk magic. It was time to do a lot of things like that. He would kick everybody else out of the studio but me, because I was the only one that he would tell how he'd done his magic tricks. So we really enjoyed learning a lot about magic and learning a lot about broadcasting. And the humbleness that I had when I started this show 20 years ago, with all the great people that we had. Dan Zwicker was rated as one of the top analysts in the country at that point in time. Paul Cooley was a great. Paul Bates had a voice that didn't matter what he said, you knew he was right. And, you know, and then just being there with Daryl Good, the whole head of the econ department here and like that, it's been a real honor for me to have been able to do this show for this long a time period.
Well, maybe we should hear a little something from Charlie. We pulled this earlier in the week. Dave Dickey went through and pulled a couple of things and picked this one up. This was actually from Charlie's last program. I think it was in March of 2002.
Corn futures seem to be a follower this week. The March contract had a high of 204, a low of 199. March settled at 202, up 1.5 from a week ago. May's contract at 208.25, down 0.25 from last week. Do you feel the corn will continue to follow beans, or what would it take to break out on its own?
Well, Charlie, I hate to differ with you, but
it's
corn isn't following beans this
okay.
week. We're closing May and July lower, and they can't seem to get out of the blocks, but I'm not a bear.
Gary, we don't mind you disagreeing with some of the traders in Chicago. Not at all. The U.S. Energy Secretary Friday supported legislation that would end the oxygenate additive mandates for clean-burning gasoline. It's expected that they said that would...
Well, that's the late Charles Lindy. He was the very first host of this program. Dan Zwicker, you've been on the program for a very long time. In a number of... positions, I suppose, too, with Zwicker and Associates. I don't know whether you were with Zwicker and Associates at first or with
Yeah,
Bond
at
Bureau.
The beginning, we were, well, it was Zwicker Consulting at that point
right.
in time. It was 1988, and of course, when Charlie came over and visited me to talk about the program, that he wanted to do something like Wall Street Week, but he wanted to do it with the radio in the agricultural field. Like you said, I think it was like March, April of 88. That was before the corn market really began to take off. And I think we were trading $2.20 corn, and then all of a sudden, there about middle part of May, the market realized that there just wasn't enough moisture around, and we took off, and we had a strong 7-week rally there to kind of start off commodity week. So it was kind of exciting times because we had just kind of come out of the pick and roll and the pick certificates and all this business of the mid-80s when you were working for me.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, I look back and I go, well, what happened to these 20 years? And of course, at the time, I was Wicker Consulting, and then in 97, I sold my newsletter business to AgriVisor Services and spent 10 years with them. And then, of course, retired from Illinois Farm Bureau there a year ago, and now I'm with ADM Grain Group. I've always wanted to work for a commercial grain company. ADM gave me that opportunity to do that at 57 years old. So I'm very appreciative of them hiring an old guy. Usually us 50-somethings, the companies are trying to figure out a way to shove us out the door, not bring us in the door. And I really enjoy my job, and I really love it, and I have a lot of appreciation for ADM giving me that opportunity.
Paul, I have a question for you, and I don't think I've ever asked this of any of you, but you talked about the fanfare of being on the radio. What does it mean to your business? Commodity Week, the closing market report, your affairs with – and you're on a lot of radio stations, so not just this one.
The three things here. This is a learning process to gather information from my co-panel people because we do learn a lot. You have to be fast. We had to answer quickly. But, you know, name recognition, and it has encouraged people as far away as Ottawa to Vincennes, Indiana, to, Decatur. Our signal doesn't go past that in that area too far up until then. But, you know, as far as name recognition, they listen to the voice. So it has been very good in that respect. But it's a learning process that we learn, and we learn particularly from sometimes the successful panelists we have on. They give us insight on how to make a buck, how to trade, how to do something, and it all kind of a new idea every time I'm on.
Hey, speaking of that, Jackie Vakes told me after she was scared to death the first time she came on the show, which wasn't all that long ago. She was scared just to be in the show. And the one thing that you don't see, well, that you don't know about is that when I'm here behind one side of the panel and the other three folks are on the other side of the table, and while I'm asking questions, they have to listen to the question, and they really don't know who I'm going to point at particularly. And Jackie didn't get how we made this really work, and that this was just a holdover from Charlie. He'd start in on a question, and he'd point at you, and you either better shake your head, yes, I can answer that, or no, very quickly. And I suppose it seems to work from the inside, Wayne, that, you know, if I'm pointing at you, you're going to answer a question one way or the other.
Either that or you better shake your head no real fast, Todd. And Charlie didn't like to let you off the hook that easy that way either. But, no, we learned a lot. And I always said that being one of the youngest and also one of the most naive young traders at the time that this show started, that it was always to my advantage to have my name mentioned with those same other famous and wonderful people that had been around and had good reputations. They didn't have a darn thing to gain by having me on the panel with them, but I always learned something. So I've been able to grow a lot through the years and take advice from a lot of very sage people. And we'd like to thank a lot of them at this point in time. You know, especially one of the guys that's not here with us today is old Paul Bates. So we learned a lot from Paul through the years, and what a gentleman.
Well, our thanks go out to Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group of Decatur, Illinois. And that wraps up this 20th anniversary edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. Have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.